Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of I Do, I Did, I Don't. I'm Lori Wood here, as always, with my partner in crime, Steve Fatula. We're with McCoy Fatula. And today, as we're drinking our coffee and waking up, we thought we'd talk about tracing, what that is, and any other information that Mr. Fatula can give you on that subject. So good morning, all.
Good morning, everybody. Yeah, so tracing is an interesting thing that people don't really understand or know. And it can make a big swing in kind of how property is split.
So in a divorce. We're talking about divorce settlement. I probably should have led with that. But tracing is a piece that really can make a huge difference in the outcome.
Yeah, so we kind of jump right into this. And I think that's because we started our conversations before the
recording.
The recording.
We should have hit the record button, but sometimes we have pregame conversation. Yeah,
so we kind of just come in like mid-thought, ready to go. So in a divorce,
come on, people, keep up.
You split property. Okay, we got that point. We're back up.
Good.
And it's the way you value property is interesting because each piece kind of has a different thing to it. But homes are usually the big one, and retirement accounts are usually the other one, right? So we can kind of talk about those as in generals. When you're dealing with a house, you're dealing with the value as of the day of trial, which is kind of a fictitious forward-looking date. Basically, last second, what's it worth, then split it at that price.
Because a lot of people believe that it's the value when they separate it. That's a big misconception. And a lot of property is kind of valued, the timeline stops. But real estate is different.
It's kind of like you have to look at, does it grow or shrink by itself? And then that kind of is determining what it is. So like houses are going to keep going, right? The values change every day. And as you live in them longer, the equity increases. So there's this constantly changing number. Stocks, the same thing, right? Recently, they could be up or down. We never know.
Right. Where they're going, we don't
know. Where they go, we don't know. Bank accounts are the opposite. They kind of are stagnant.
And so they get like frozen like a Polaroid or freezed in time at that moment.
In theory, right? Yeah. That's an easier one to do because at Tuesday, on this date, you had a balance per your statement. That is the amount that should be split. Now, there's always, well, we had pending transactions. Okay, well, you know, there's always going to be some changes to these things. Right.
Trace those transactions.
You can trace those transactions, tracing comes right? in.
Yeah.
You have things like mortgages that you know what the debt was. So that's something we can talk about. But again, the debt constantly is changing even on that because someone's living in the home, sometimes both of them.
And in theory, paying the bill.
And in theory, paying the bill. If not, we'll get into Epstein and Watson another day. But that is a whole different thing. So when we're looking at how to value, when to value all the stuff, tracing becomes this element of how do you get more from the home, or the home being the thing we're talking about now, and how do you kind of secure your interest, and what is the attorney's point or value in this, and then what's your expert, because you're going to want an expert most likely in these kind of cases. So.
Right.
What tracing is saying you have a right to prove to the court that you put money into this thing from a source that was not communal.
So if I put down the down payment either before or during marriage out of an inheritance I received that never was joined in a joint bank account, or I cashed out a retirement plan that I had before I married my person and put that down on a house, that would be my money?
Yeah, so basically, let's take a step back from that and go, the courts are looking at, first, everything's kind of communal property. That's the presumption we start, which is basically anything you acquire from the day you get married through the date of separation, comma, maybe.
Okay.
Right? Because there's these carve-out and these exceptions, and you've hit a couple with what you said. So if you had it before the marriage, well, it was your separate property, so it stays your separate property. Again, everything we're saying, guys, has an asterisk next to it because you can change ownership.
Right, because I have to prove it and you can change ownership and all that.
Correct. So if it comes from before the marriage, it's yours. If it came as a gift, it's yours. If it came through inheritance, it's yours. If it came through the transmutation of a wrong word. If it came through the changing of a different property, it could be yours. So let's say you had a retirement before, like what you just described, and then you cashed it out and you put that into an investment account. Or a home. It was separate property. It stayed separate property. You bought it. You used it. You did whatever. It stays separate property. And as long as you can trace these things, that's kind of what the court's saying. And then once you get married, everything kind of changes. Right. So if you had a house before you got married and then you get married and you're still paying down the house, well, all of a sudden the thing that was paying it, your separate property income, is no longer in existence. right? So now you have community property income, right? Because the second you get married, all of your stuff changes. Now, again, prenups can affect this. You can have different ways to solve this or to avoid this, but most people don't have that. So we just go into the basics. All right, so you had a house before marriage, then you got married. Did you sell the house? No, we just lived in it. Okay, was it paid off? No, no one's house is paid off. So we paid it down over the years. Okay, so now we have two different types of interest in this home, and that's right. When it starts kind of breaking this stuff down. What people tend to not remember or recall or worry about until the end is which amount is which, right? So if you marry, Lori, I'll use you, right?
You
let's say
me.
You have your house and you get married, but it was after you owned this house for 10 years. So you've paid a good amount of it down. Then you're married for 10 years, you're paying it off. But during those last 10 years, it's gone up in crazy value.
Right.
Right. Which is
a very easy scenario.
Right? Very easy scenario here. Right. So then we look at it at the end. And let's say you're getting a divorce and the house is 500 grand of equity. So now we have to go, okay, so how do we split that? And now the other side's going, well, let's just split it equally. Each get 250.
Right. Because how quickly they forget that there was any thing before them or any money paid into it prior.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And that's where you could certainly do that to be done.
Right.
But sometimes that's not what you want to do. And sometimes that's not fair.
Right.
So then you would have the onus of trying to prove that you had this separate property value. In the scenario we have, it should be easy because you would know the statement balance as of the date of marriage. You would, in theory, be able to find the value through a realtor or some type of historical analysis. And as long as you haven't complicated this conversation, it's pretty easy. But most people complicate this conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So things and that good.
Let me ask, because people ask this question a lot. Does it matter whose name is on the deed?
The answer is probably not, right? Because there can be exceptions where that is a significant thing. But the courts in California really are looking towards fairness. So the deed may not be demonstrative of the final outcome.
Because a lot of people, maybe one person has poor credit or they can't qualify together as married. And so it was a necessity in order to get the house to leave one person off the application and loan process and all that stuff.
Correct.
Doesn't mean they shouldn't be on the deed. That's separate and apart.
Yes.
But it seems to give one person a little power, but that's not necessarily true.
No, we've had plenty of cases where someone's been tricked, probably the wrong word, but
encouraged
to leave the deed for some reason. And then they'll get put back on it later. And shocking, it doesn't happen. And then the divorce happens right away.
Or we've had cases where the owner of the home has been encouraged to put this brand new spouse on the deed to a home that they had never paid a penny towards.
And those complicated the other way. We've seen people lose a lot of interest in making bad decisions.
Yeah, and get really mad.
They do get really bad.
At the effects of it. So think ahead. Number one, don't get rid of any documents related to.
Yeah. So the second part of this is you have to prove everything if you're the one that wants to assert this tracing claim. And the courts are looking for this thing to be pretty perfect.
Right.
So
and clean.
And clean. So like it almost that anybody could see that the dollars went from this hand, to the bank, to the title, to something. And we've had cases that will get ready to go to trial over. And there's not a single document. And it doesn't matter whether it's a $20,000 investment or a $200,000 or a $3 million investment in the one case. If you don't have the proof, the court can't just give you that.
No. And, so, and the particular client that I'm thinking of was saying, but they knew it was mine.
Yes.
And they're just doing it to be mean, but they knew it was mine.
And unfortunately, everybody forgets what they know when the divorce happens. If you have a spouse that's agreeing to that, get it in writing. If you can get it written down, if you can get it notarized.
I was just going to ask if a recording, if a writing, if watching, something would be helpful.
It's certainly helpful.
Yeah.
Now, again, those kind of cases best lend themselves to settlement because, you know, we walk into court with a lot of unknowns.
Sure.
And to us, the documents are crystal clear and to the court, maybe they're not. And that can be a swing of a couple hundred thousand dollars. And you could, you know, that's a big deal.
And in settlements that you work out yourself, you have a degree of control.
Correct.
You go into court, you have no control. So if I only put $5,000 down on that house, do I really want to spend $10,000 minimum in trial to try and get that back? So it's kind of let's weigh things.
It's certainly a weigh thing, right?
But retirement plans need to be traced. What are the assets that tracing is prevalent?
Yeah, so I think you've hit the two big ones, at least the two most common, right? So the house is the easiest. And the second part of the house is when you do improvements. Because what a mess that can be. Because either you can create value that you actually give into the house.
Or if the guy doesn't know what they're doing, you can decrease the value.
And that's probably the other part of this is we had a case recently, and then we'll all answer your question. But let's say they had help buying the house from family, $50,000. And then they bought the house a couple years ago, but the market was high when COVID kicked through.
Right.
And then it went down a little bit. And now the house actually has gone down below what they bought it for.
Oh.
Right. So now the equity is actually less than what the person has put into the home from a separate property. So
they're at a negative equity.
Yeah. And at that point, there's no communal interest. They'll get paid out and it'll be done. Even if like, hey, I put in 50, but the house is 10, well, you get 10 and it's all over. They don't get to carry that. Like, it's not a rollover investment, right?
So I mean, it's a risk. Real estate, retirement, stock market, it's a risk.
It's all a risk. So and then now to your question of what is tracing or when is tracing coming up. So the house is obvious. Investments are big, right? When did you put money into the account? The stock markets, personal investments, those ones are really, in theory, easy, where you could look at what the value was before the marriage, but that doesn't actually do anything. Right. Because it's ebbing and flowing as you're continuing to contribute. Right. So there's this problem portion. So that one's a huge one that you'll need to get an expert involved in. Pensions, all of that kind of thing is in my mind, much the same. So
and you say expert because it's not like this person can just go back on Zillow and say this is what it was.
Yeah.
Then I mean, what kinds of documents does a court require to prove the separate property interest?
So for a house, what we want is the closing documents, which is sometimes really hard to find.
Right. Maybe they keep them for 3, 5, 6 years and then they're in the house for 20 years and they have no idea where these things are.
I think people keep the weirdest crap and then the stuff they need just somehow always disappears.
Right.
That's our experience. You have receipts when you bought like a snow cone in like 40 years ago, but you don't have your house receipts. Well, I don't know. We went. And the reality, it always happens like this. So you can try to get those by request. You can try to subpoena them from the banks. But if you're watching, a lot of the stuff goes away and people's mortgages get sold and companies come and go. And it's sometimes a lot harder, if not impossible, to prove things.
Yeah, when I had a mortgage, I think it had three different three different lenders. Mm-hmm. My mortgage was bought and sold several times.
Without your knowledge, consent?
And no, just all of a sudden it shows up with a different name. Here's your same bill. I'm like, it'd be really great if they, you know, messed up and, you know, credited my account or something. Right. Or
it doesn't seem to go that way.
No, it never goes. Sometimes you get double billed. It never goes the other way.
Yeah. And that's the tough part is sometimes it's really hard to find that document. But at least that would show where money came from in theory.
So we have a case that there was a bank account mm-hmm. that was a big deal. And it was about $60,000, which is a significant amount of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money to play with.
And our client contends that it was inherited from a parent who passed away. Mm-hmm. Of course, her spouse forgot that, you know, there was an inheritance and wanted half the account. Mm-hmm. So we had to subpoena bank records. Mm-hmm. It's likely that that's the subpoena of the bank records and time-wise when people are looking at this to go about it.
So like so to get the information, you're right. Probably talking about 60 days on a good day.
Right.
And that's if they're not overwhelmed and often they ask for extensions. So if you're leading and running into a trial, which people are doing, right? And then they go, oh, I need this stuff. Well, you better plan to do those things now. Our thought is always, if you have a potential trial issue, don't wait till trial to start getting your facts together. No. Right? You got to do it up front. The other part of it is you have to subpoena backwards. Banks don't hold on to everything forever. We're finding more and more ways to get further back because most things are digital. So they seem to exist better.
But it's really crazy because a lot of organizations are like, if you need it from 2020 forward, we don't have it. Or backwards, yeah. We don't have it. I mean, they're smaller windows than there ever were before.
It's supposed to be 7 years. We did just find a bank that was willing to work with us to get us something from 2004. So 20 years, we never got it, right? So we settled the case.
They were willing to do it.
They swore we could if we did the right subpoenas. So
really?
That was a lady on the phone. Who knows if they actually would and have them.
But at least there was a crack in the door.
At least there was a crack in the door. We've never seen it go back that far. So
no,
I wouldn't expect every case to be able to do that. But in this situation, you know, there's no harm in asking, I guess. And if you know you're going to have an argument about this, you do discovery right up front. You either ask the other side, do they agree? Which, again, they won't. But if they do, it's done. You don't have to go stretch yourself out.
Right.
And then you go subpoenaing your own documents because somebody has to be able to get them.
Yeah. And you got to plan ahead. But
yeah.
Let's talk about some of those asterisks that you mentioned.
Sure.
So when my mother passed, if inheritance came to me and I put it in my account, it's my money. But not all inheritances remain separate property, depending on what moves you make with them. Is that correct?
Yeah. So a lot of it becomes, I think everyone kind of compares it to like a bowl of spaghetti, right? If your bowl was empty and it just holds the spaghetti, then you know what spaghetti we're talking about, right? But if you have a pot of spaghetti and you throw more spaghetti in there and you mix it around, how do you know the noodles you're pulling out are the exact same? And that's the court's approach, right? It has to be identical.
Right.
So there's ways it's like, well, it had nothing and I put all the spaghetti in and then I added 10 more noodles on top so I can pull out any 10 court and at least the rest are mine. The court might buy that analysis to go, okay, there's no way that you've mixed it to a point that we couldn't at least just take what you put back in out and you get 80% of it or something, but at least it's better than none.
Now
what,
all I can see is a bowl of pasta.
I know. Now I'm hungry because I'm like, I didn't eat this morning. That pasta was good. So like some of this is if you get inheritance, the best answer is open a new account, put it in the new account and never, ever mix it.
And they call it commingling.
If it's mixed, it's commingled. Okay. And that's the problem is a lot of people go, that's what I did. And then you look at it and you go, you did put it in the account, but then what are all these other deposits? Oh, well, that's my income. Well, your income's communal. So you just mixed it.
And that's what people don't understand.
And that's what gets people caught. And that's what gets them really mad that they put all this money in.
And trying to do the right thing.
Right. Or we have a case where the inheritance is over $500,000. And the client's position is, well, my spouse told me to use it to buy all these things. And the answer is that probably is going to hurt your feelings, but you're probably not getting it back. Right. Because if you use money to buy a car for a child. Okay, what's the car worth now? It's definitely not worth what you paid for it.
Right, and do you want to take it away from the child?
Right, and then that always comes into play. And
right.
Then it's like, oh, well, we used it to buy these things. Okay, well, how'd that do? Oh, well, the market tanked and it all went to zero. Okay, well, then it's gone. It's the risk that you shouldn't have borne yourself, but you did.
Right, because even without the spouse, if that same investment was made, that would be the risk you took.
Correct.
What happens if you pay off your spouse's credit card debt or car?
So another example where if the debt was before the marriage, it's their separate debt, right? So if you paid off their separate debt with your money, you could, in theory, have a right to reimbursement.
Okay.
But you'd have to prove it. And that's harder because the numbers get a little bit more weird.
Because credit card numbers fluctuate.
Credit card numbers change.
But in theory, a statement dated before marriage from that person's credit card showing the amount that you paid off would, and highly doubt that the amounts are ever going to be exact because there's probably a little overlapping of.
But in theory.
But in theory, at least you can get that piece back.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it where like liens from judgments, right? Because they're recorded. So that one was easier to find. It was like a spouse lost $46,000 judgment against them. So at some point, the community had to pay that off, right? Because it was on a house or something. They wanted to do something. So when the community paid it off, his separate $46,000 debt was covered by the community. So at the end, we had to make sure the community got reimbursed $46,000.
And when you're saying reimbursed, it's not like the other person writes a check. It's usually a house is being sold or an asset is being liquidated. And before the parties receive any net from that, these things are being paid and paid off.
That's exactly it. It's most people don't have piles of cash. So the court has to kind of make that happen.
Right.
So let's take the $46,000. They sell a house. Their house is $500,000 equity. Before they split it, they make sure that $46,000 is accounted for. And usually it means that, you know, one person is getting half of that.
Yeah.
And that comes from the other side's pocket. And then we all move on.
Yeah. And then most of the time, the one that's getting less is not too happy.
Yeah, usually
but
not.
It's the right thing to do. And if the shoe were reversed and it was their separate property and they did get the benefit of their cards being paid off.
Sure.
So
interest and all that was accounted for. Yeah.
Right. What's the weirdest tracing case or the weirdest, strangest thing that you've ever had to deal with respect to tracing?
I don't know if there's weird. I think it's more of like not a waste of time. I like to be honest on what we're doing and I don't like to waste time.
Right.
So when people come up, they have no recollection of what's happened, how they bought these houses or how this stuff, that stuff drives me nuts. And I enjoy seeing when the courts rule against those type of people. Right.
I've got a client in particular who, and now I understand why there's a tick in your, you know, you almost have Tourette's anytime we deal with them. So I get it.
How do you not know is where it comes down. Like either you recall, unless you buy and sell so many houses that you truly don't know where the money's coming or going. It's but just even crap. Then, like your answer is just crap. You know, when you bought this house and you guys were 20, you didn't have $100,000 to buy this house with. Right. Like if I bought a house when I was 20, I wasn't sitting on $100,000 to buy this house.
No,
or in the alternative, either. If I was, I would also know that, right? Like it would be like, oh, I am super rich. I buy a house.
Right. I was 20 years old and I had $100,000. Right? That would have been said more than
that
once.
That would have been said so many times. So that when you're in front of a court and someone is just so, so adamant about, no, judge, I don't think that's what's happening. And you just want to be like, you're a freaking liar. That stuff drives me nuts because we shouldn't have to spend so much money to fight it. It's just so dumb.
Yeah. And it
but
is.
But it happens all the time.
All the time. I've got a scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a family member who is young,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have $100,000.
Shock.
I know, right?
We're all there. Like,
and what she did
mm-hmm.
is go around to her mother, her boyfriend's parents
mm-hmm.
and any of her mom's friends that she could think of and say, I'd like to buy a house. Do you want to help me with the down? And she just had her hand out and I was amazed at how much she collected by begging like $50,000.
Jesus. Yeah.
I'm like, maybe I need those kind of friends.
Maybe you need those kind of friends because I don't think I'd have any of my friends doing that. They'd be like, yeah, okay. We also would like houses.
Right. The number one, the fact that you had the gall or the balls, whatever mm-hmm. it took to ask, I would be so humiliated to be standing there with my hand out. But more power to you because you got 50 grand. So now they're still together, but they used that. Well, she's the one that went around and asked.
Mm-hmm.
So the gift was really to her. They're not married.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if they break up?
That's so non-married people buying houses is like the worst situation.
Right.
Because they're partners in a business sense, which means they have to go to civil court to deal with it. And that's outside of our world because that one just is slow and nuts. And that's just.
But it's interesting.
It is because it happens all the
because
time.
Because now if they get married,
mm-hmm.
then what happens?
If they got married, in theory, it's her separate property, depending on who she collected it from. But let's take her scenario as she gets married. Because it's interesting on what would she prove. So if they all gave her cash,
right?
Let's just say they all gave $5,000. She got 10 $5,000 cash donations.
I think she got one $20,000, two fives, a 10, and then something very small from his parents. And I was floored. I couldn't even believe it.
So she would have to go to each person, one, get a gift letter. Probably would have to happen anyway for the mortgage company.
And when you say gift letter, that's a letter saying that on this date, I gifted you $10,000, and I expect nothing in return.
Yeah. So what the title company's mortgage or bank somebody wants is where this money came from because of I think laundering rules or something.
Drug money.
Yeah. So they need to have an answer. So if it came into your account and they want to know why, somebody will write something and it usually just says, I gave this money for them to buy a house. Well, that's helpful to a court, but it's a document. So it's hearsay, but it's a starting point.
Right.
So then you got to go find those people. So this person gets married and divorced. They got to go find these people and get all that, which is like her scenario is like, if you're going to get married, a prenup's important so that you can kind of confirm facts now so that you don't have to deal with this crap later, because you all signed this agreement on what happened and all these things.
And if you don't do the prenup, mm-hmm. you can do a postnup.
Sure.
Which yeah. leads me to another scenario. I have
sure.
an acquaintance who every now and then will get in a panic over what they believe is this big legal issue and reach out. And usually I'm like, it's not even a thing. It doesn't make sense. Mm. They're just hypersensitive, which I understand courts can be intimidating and sure. things are scary. She was getting married and she owned a house for several years before this. And she says, I'm just going to put them on the deed. And I said, why? And this is just person to person talking, no legal mm-hmm. advice given. And I said, who put the down payment down? She said, I did. Who's been paying the mortgage? I have. Who's been doing the upkeep? I have. Who pays mm-hmm. the taxes? The gardener. Paid for the roof? I have. So what did he do to earn his name on this house? Because in my ever so humble opinion, mm-hmm. he should pay half the value of the house or match or have some skin in the game. You don't just get gifted to be on the deed. I don't care if you're just getting married. Marriages and fail.
They're just getting married?
Yes.
Yeah. No.
Right. I would never. You want to pay. And my parents were a perfect example. There was a lot of marriages between my parents. I think mm-hmm. my mom was married four times.
Okay.
Her husband was married four times. My father was married three. His wife was married three. And some of it happened before me. Mm-hmm. And the ones that they ended with were long-term marriages. My stepmonster comes from a family with millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. My father also did well. My father really liked money. Saw some houses over here and he's like, yeah, well, you should put me on the deed. She's like, you have to buy your way in. The house is worth this much. Give me half and I'll put you on the deed. And that's exactly what happened. And it seems fair.
It does seem fair.
Because it makes it a lot easier if there's going to be a divorce, because there's skin in the game on both parties.
Yep.
Both parties have an equal share. Both parties are paying on the mortgage. But why would you just add someone to an asset of yours because you love them?
I think it's just that love fear combo, because we see a lot of people that it's a pressure move. And if you're listening to this, don't do it. That's the answer. Right?
Would you advise someone like that person who wanted to come in and just put their new spouse on their asset?
Yeah. So if you had a postnup, at least you could confirm certain things.
Right.
Like as of the date of doing this, the value is 500 grand. There's 200 grand of equity. If we were to split, that 200,000 is mine. And then we'll split anything else. Right. Okay. That's not
so you could appease the person with adding them. But the agreement is this is the deal if I do.
Correct. And for some money to an attorney, you're kind of helping tens of thousands of dollars later if you get a divorce. And if you don't get a divorce, none of this really matters because, someone dies and someone gets a house. But we look at that part of if it doesn't work out.
Right. And people get so hung up on the prenup and the postnup. Mm-hmm. But the goal of marriage is to stay together till death do you part.
Correct.
So that should be the goal and what you work towards. And this really should never come into play.
Yeah, and this kind of makes everyone honest or keeps them honest, because you don't go after things that aren't yours.
Right.
And that's fair, too. Like, that's what it should be, right? Right. If it's not yours before, it's not yours now. And that stuff is a big deal. So my answer would be I would tell them not to do it unless there's something in writing confirming certain things first.
Well, that's good, because they're coming in next week.
They're going to get the same talk then.
Yeah. It is a postnup.
Yeah.
But I before they got married, I'm like, you should do a prenup. Mm-hmm. You should come in, meet with one of the attorneys and just get information. What you do with it is up to you. But if I worked really hard as a single person mm-hmm. and acquired anything, and it's not that I want my marriage to fail, but being a realist, it doesn't just take me. It takes both of us to work on it. I can guarantee what I will do, but I don't know about the other person.
That's fair.
And so why would I just willy-nilly give? Nobody's ever willy-nilly given anything to me. Mm-hmm. So skin in the game is always good.
Skin in the game is always good. I think keeps people honest. I think that's important. And then you have documents that confirm honesty.
Yeah. And really, divorces kind of show who people are. Like, there are some people who get divorces and say, you know what, you just keep everything, I'll start over. which is not a great thing to do because it makes it harder for you.
Yep.
But it keeps the peace a lot and, you know, it is what it is. It inspires you to work hard and regain things. And then there's other people who want every penny from the other person and just want the other person to just suffer for the rest of their lives. It's kind of crazy.
The answer is yep.
We're talking about tracing. Not sure how we got here, but all things relative. If you had any closing words on tracing, what would it be for people to prepare for that?
Yeah, I think it's one that know that it's an option. And I think that's the hardest part because some attorneys get into auto mode and they don't ask questions and you don't say, and then you go through the whole process and you don't even know you can do this. So if you believe you put things into something before the marriage or with inheritance or something else, bring it up to your attorney first and foremost as quickly as possible.
And save the paperwork.
Whatever you have, scan it, copy it. If you're going,
put it in a safe deposit box, anything.
Yeah, because, you know, for those that are just listening for fun and just getting married, you know, this might save you tens of thousands of dollars.
And we don't want you to get divorced. We encourage marriages around here.
Yeah.
But it's just like buying a house and paying the mortgage. You're going to want that receipt showing that you paid it off.
Yep.
Just keep receipts. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
We hope it's not an issue, but it'd be great to be prepared and think ahead if it ever comes up.
Correct. That's the easy thing. Plus fires. Fires happen.
Fires happen.
So do it for the fires.
And if you get a separate property inheritance or a windfall of money and you put it in an account, don't put your paycheck in that account.
Correct.
If
that account gets that one item, that's it.
That's it.
Let it build and grow on its own.
Nothing wrong with having 17 accounts.
Nope.
Good thing.
That's it. That's great.
Unless they're all overdrawn.
Yeah. The banks will not like you at that point.
No. And with that, I think we're going to let everybody go and enjoy the rest of the day. Hopefully the weather is great where they are, where the listeners are happening, because it's been spotty here.
It's been spotty. A little cloudy this morning.
Yeah. Making my brain cloudy. But thank you for tuning in. We will see you next week where we will try not to pregame, or we will try and involve you from the
We're gonna pregame. We're gonna find something to pregame with.
Yeah, maybe our pregame will be better next week.
Yeah.
All right. Take care of yourselves. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. And we'll see you soon.